Welcome to a new episode of Product Directions Podcast, 100 Product Strategies. We are your insider access to top product leaders shaping the strategy of the most diverse industries today. I'm your host, Nacho Vassino, and I'll be digging into the real-life situations, problems, and frameworks used for strategy with product people all around the world in all kinds of products and markets. While there is no recipe for success, listening to others' experiences may give you the edge you need to solve your next strategic challenge. Hello and welcome to a new episode. Today I'm really happy because I'm with Irina Struk, and she is a product lead with, I would say, many years of experience leading products in startups, but also with some interesting experience in larger companies. So that might be interesting to get that perspective as well. But also, more importantly, for me as a person who is really involved in the product community, she's the organizer of Product Tank London, which I would say is probably one of the, if not the largest local product meetup in the world, and a very ancient one for if that counts. But yeah, very, very proud of the work you are doing in that community. But Irina, welcome to the show.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Maybe to introduce you a bit better than what I did, can you give us a few words about yourself and what you have been doing lately?
Yeah, definitely. But that was a very nice introduction, so thank you very much for that one. But yeah, I usually like to start with a little story of, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I'm here, really. So I think the story starts really during the pandemic, where I, like many of us, you know, had a lot of time to do yoga, start meditating, journaling, and all of that. But that also gave me some time to do some self-reflection as well. And at some point, I realized that, you know, my mission is to leave it better than I found it in some way. And to me, that means that I want to be adding as much value to as many people's lives as possible. And I figured that one of the ways that I could be doing that is by, you know, utilizing my product experience and my expertise to help the companies that I believe in to build all of the amazing products that they are building and bring the positive change to the world in a way. And so that's why I am, you know, currently running the product function at a B2B SaaS startup called HandsHQ, which we're going to talk a bit more about today. And then I also do advisory with early stage and growth stage companies where I help them work on their amazing products. I also work with Techstars to help add value to their portfolio companies. And then I also lead the team behind Product Tank London, which is how you and I met. It might sound like a lot of things happening at the same time, but I feel like it really helps me bring as much experience and as much opinions to, and you know, help add value to the people and companies I work with.
Yeah, perfect. I think that's, I feel very close to that mission. I think that, as you said, the combination of things you are doing probably helps you have more impact towards that mission. Since we have a special topic today, or not a special topic, but we will discuss strategy in a very interesting context, maybe we can discuss, start by kind of bringing what your company is doing to the table and the situation you are facing, or what you were facing when defining this strategy.
Yeah, definitely. So at HandsHQ, we have two B2B products. So one product, the main product, and has been out there for about 10 years now, I guess. And it's a risk assessment software for any type of high-risk work. But usually our customers are in industries like construction, you know, civil engineering, defense, facilities management, and similar. So this product was probably one of the first ones in its niche in the UK. So we are quite happy with being one of the leaders on the market. And the product is growing at a good pace, so we are quite happy with that. And the second product was launched, I think, around probably 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. And it was initially a feature, or sort of like an add-on on top of the first and main product. And, you know, customers loved it. And at some point, we decided to make a separate product out of it. So that's how we are now working with the two B2B products. So the second product is more in HR tech, I'd say. And the first one is, risk assessment. So mainly construction tech industry.
Perfect, perfect. And maybe to complete the background, you are working on these two products to I would say to market, because probably the market has some agency, but these two products with the same team. So that's kind of the strategic challenge is around how we kind of invest the right amount in each of those, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's one team, a fairly small team as well. So we are trying to split the resource. And also it's worth mentioning that because these products are quite adjacent, so we like our target audience is a little bit different, but also quite similar in the same way. So it's mostly the same types of companies that we work with, because, you know, everyone says, you know, focus on serving the same client. It's going to be so much easier when you build the product. And I feel like that's really true, because we already knew what people wanted, or we could connect to, you know, other departments in those companies to understand their needs better. So I feel like launching the second product was a lot better rather than if we started from, you know, a whole separate idea in a very different market.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So that's from a business perspective, it's a reasonable expansion strategy. But maybe to get it from your product perspective, I will start with my typical initial setup question, which is, when were you facing this? We need to come up with a strategy. I'm not sure if you have planning cycles or any trigger for starting to create the strategy. And maybe what was the first step that you did when you realized that you need to create this new strategy?
Yeah. So I think when I just joined the team, I quickly realized that, you know, we have a limited resource. We have a fairly small team. And then we have these two products that we need to be taken care of. So, you know, like any good startup, a lot of challenges, which is always makes it a lot more interesting. And I remember some of the key challenges at the time were we had a lot of feedback about the first product because it's been out there for many years. We have thousands of customers. So we get quite a lot of feedback about it. And, you know, people are requesting different features or, you know, can we do this or can you help us do that better and things like that. And then the second product was still pre-product market fit. So it was lacking quite a lot of basic functionality, I'd say. So compared to the first one, right, I think the first one was mostly lacking nice to haves in a way. And then the second one was lacking quite a lot of core features. And then the feedback for the first product was, you know, manageable friction. So people could do things. There were workarounds. Maybe they were not the most optimal ones, but, you know, people could go about them and finish their jobs to be done in a way. And the second one was quite critical because in some occasions they couldn't complete and couldn't get the value out of the product. We were also working on a couple of integrations at the time, which also took a lot of our team's time and effort. So we are quite spread quite thin at the time. So what I decided to do is start to gather the data that I needed from various teams. So that was product, marketing, you know, the CEO, the founder, and then design, and just essentially all of the teams that we work with. So first of all, I started working with the CEO to clarify what our company's vision is, like an overarching vision for the whole company. And mm-hmm. Just a side note, I think it's always better to have it on a longer term scale. So ideally, you would want to know the, you know, 2, 3, maybe 5 years vision, or at least like approximately, just so you know where you're going approximately. Yeah. That's always useful. So yeah, we started with that. So we started thinking about things like, you know, where are we at now? How different do we want to be in the years or 2 years time? What's our strategic narrative? Where are we going with these two products? Or, you know, what are our values and how do they reflect in the way that we build products? So for example, we are a very customer centric company, and that also reflects in the way we deliver you know, new product solutions and how do we add value to our customers' lives, really. So yeah, we started with that. I think that part was quite easy because the founder, Jamie, is a very strategic thinker and, you know, a visionary in a way, and he's great at storytelling. So, you know, that part for me was a breeze, really. I didn't really have to do much. So that was good. But then having
one clarifying question to that, assuming that there's a fairly small company and the B2B SaaS space, so the company vision, the founder vision was kind of pretty close or the same as the product vision. So do you need two different visions in this case, right?
Yes and no, because we have two products and, you know, visions for them would be different. So we had like an overarching vision. We try to set priorities a little bit better as well, so that we know which product we want to be focusing on, and you know, where, how do we see the world change if we, you know, deliver our vision in a way. Right. So right. Yeah, kind of yes and no.
Sorry, I interrupt you. So we have this vision. What's next? How are you going to do?
Yeah, so we have this vision. We are happy with the vision. And then having clarified that, I then started to try and break it down further. So I didn't want to overcomplicate things just because I know that, you know, if I'm going to create 20 pages of a strategy document, no one is going to read it. No one's going to listen to my 2-hour presentation. So my goal was to end up with like a short and clear strategy that the team would actually remember, right? So the goal is to not only write the strategy and be happy with it, but also deploy it and then use it on a day-to-day basis anyway. So that one was my goal, short and nice and clear. So the first part of the whole process was the product vision, right? So we have two products, and I try to then come from the company vision to these product visions. So things that I usually include in the product vision is, you know, where are we today? So what do we do today? Who's our target market now? How do we satisfy their needs? And then where do we want to get in a year's time, or let's say 2-3 years time? So what problems do we want to be solving for what audience, right? Because sometimes your target audience also changes if you're going up market or down market, or, you know, however your strategy is leading you.
By the way, yeah, in these sort of decisions, where are you collecting them? Is this an artifact? Is this a mirror board? Is what sort of...
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. Yeah, so it depends. I think it changes every year just because I try to do different things. For example, last year it was Miro. So we started gathering all of these artifacts in Miro just because it's easy to use it. It's very flexible. You know, you can visualize things and stuff like that. In the past, we've also involved our designers. So we had very nice visuals in Figma. And then we made like a little presentation out of it in Google Slides. So yeah, really depends. Sometimes I also use a spreadsheet if I wanted to just use text without any visual elements to it. Okay. What do you use usually for a strategy?
Yeah, for a strategy, I will tend to say I use kind of sort of document first to kind of condense the storyline, and then try to make it into a visual artifact. So exactly what you're saying, maybe this document is for a core group that is really thinking through the strategy, but then you need to deploy it with something that I usually call a one-pager. The one-pager can take many forms, but it's something that's a summary of your ideas that you want to, that people can keep fresh in their minds.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess for us, we usually start with like a whiteboarding session. And then based on the whiteboarding session, we would then maybe use Miro to just copy it there. And then it could be, Miro for a little while, and then potentially a Notion one pager at the end as well. So yeah, quite similar, I guess.
Sorry, I interrupt you again, but when maybe just to pick up the thread from there, you mentioned before collecting thoughts from different areas, and now you're mentioning this whiteboarding session. What type of information are you collecting in this initial phase of the strategy?
So I think with the whiteboard, it comes a little bit before then. So once we have a company vision, like, again, we tried to experiment with this. For example, last year we had this whiteboarding session where we had a couple of people in the room, and then we just brainstormed ideas how we can then address this vision in the longer term. So this was a more strategic thinking. This was a 3-year vision that we were working on for the product, and that the outcome of that was the like high-level wireframes of how the product would look like in the future, in a way. So we tried to, you know, think unlimited in a way. So not to be constrained by, you know, the knowledge that we have limited resource, you know, we don't have this, we don't have that. We try to think on a larger scale at that point.
Love it. Love it. So more of a storyboard, still on the some sort of vision type for the product. That makes sense?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, something a little bit more inspiring than, you know, when you're constrained to, oh, we can't do that because we don't have the resource. Or So yeah, so once the product vision is has a little bit of a draft state, I then quite like putting it in a story or like creating a little memorable storyline around this that communicates our vision. Just because I feel like stories are a lot easier to remember, right? Instead of having like a one-liner vision as people sometimes do, I quite like creating a short, you know, like 5-sentence story around this, just because people tend to have more emotions around stories. So yeah, my go-to is creating a little story around this. So that's what I did as well for 2 different products. And then after that, that gives you a good start to start thinking about the, you know, strategic themes, or, you know, some people call them pillars or intents. Yeah, whatever works for you really. But we call them pillars or intents sometimes. So, you know, it can really differ. So for example, for us, it was, we wanted to move up market with one of our products. Mm-hmm. And also for the other product, for example, we wanted to explore the, you know, the in new geography, international opportunities, because we were a UK based company and we were mostly serving the UK market at that point. So these were, for example, 2 ideas or strategic narratives, as we call them, trying to move up market and explore new geographies in a way. So essentially that gives you a good direction as to where your product is heading. And then that also gives you a good understanding of what the outcomes could be once you have achieved this, right? So for example, you could say, oh, we want to, close 5 deals in the next year in Australia, or, onboard 3 enterprise customers with a deal value of this amount of money. In a way. So just make it a bit more specific as well as to what you're trying to achieve. And then that gives you a good understanding of what are the problems that you could be solving in order to get there. And what gaps do you have in your product, right? Because if you want to expand into new geographies, that's the whole other direction versus if you wanted to dig deeper into the current market.
Yeah. Yeah. And quick question there. You expressed that you selected this intent on this pillar, but how do you select this one versus the other? So because as you clearly say, you have one or the other to address. So how do you select?
Yeah, so I think it, again, comes from the vision first. And that also is a part of this collaborative workshop that we do, where we decide that, okay, this is where we want to be in 3 years. And in order for us to get there in 3 years, right, year 1, we have to, you know, expand in Australia, for example, and then year 2 could be this, and that. So mm-hmm. having that longer term understanding, you can then break it down into more specific goals on the way.
Perfect. And then once you have the goal, let's say, hey, we said that we since our vision is to be more international, the first step should be to expand to Australia. How do you actually start mapping the things that you need to capture, or the problems, as you said, the problems you need to solve to be able to grow in Australia?
Yeah, exactly. So that's where the first part of understanding where we are at today comes in handy. Mm-hmm. Because, okay, you know that, okay, now we are here, our product can do A, B, and C, right? And then we want to get there. So you have like these 2 points, and then you understand, okay, what do we need to build in order to get there? I think based on that, that becomes pretty clear as to what you have to be building in a way.
Yeah. Perfect.
The other side of it is, how do you then prioritize all of this, right? Because usually it's a very long list of things that you should be adding. So yeah, that's another part of it.
Yeah. Now you pique my interest, but let me first try to clarify the initial phase. So we started with the vision, so the company vision from the founder. We then built some draft version of the list of the vision for the product with some storyline. Love that. And then we decide this is a strategic intent. If we want to achieve this in 3 years, and I guess this is a discussion, right? So say, assume that some will say this versus the other, and then there will be some discussion to clarify what we can pursue. Maybe on that part, how do you feel your, so I have 2 questions, actually, 2-part question probably are similar.
Sure.
The role of product in that discussion, because they're maybe growing in Australia tends to be more of a business discussion, or at least a multidiscipline discussion. So what's the role of product? And maybe similar in the same direction is, how do you show the trade-offs? So saying, hey, we can grow in Australia, or we can make the product, or can penetrate the current market. how you share that this trade-off in the two options?
Yeah, so I guess the best way to answer this is that if you have a goal, right, to for example, expand into Australia, then you might have a couple of ways to get there, right? A couple of solutions, let's say. And then what I like to do is create a business case, in a way, around these three solutions, right? So that we can, you know, evaluate each of these options that we have and then see which one will have a, you know, a higher ROI based on the numbers that we get at the end. So we tend to do that for quite a few of our like main game-changing ideas. And then if we have alternatives, then we would also do them and then try and evaluate which ones is the best.
Love it. How or where do you collect all this? You mentioned before, this is a long list of things that, because you essentially were just describing is a prioritization and how we select based on priorities. Yeah. But you said this may be a long list. So the first question is, where do you collect this this long or breadth topics that you can pursue?
Yeah, so we do use Product Board. I don't know if you've ever used Product Board for like insights from customers. And so it's a very good source for us to then go in and see what our customers have been asking for. So that's a good way to see what, you know, to apply the customer lens to our strategy in a way. The other part of it is, you know, business metrics or what revenue numbers we are trying to achieve and, you know, the strategic intents as well. So that's like the strategic lens to it and the vision as well. And then we also have the things that we call game changers in a way. So things that are going to move these metrics and are going to move the needle in a way, right? Because, you know, I think the worst thing is when you are just doing these incremental changes, you're addressing your customers' needs and, you know, everyone seems to be happy. But then at the end, they are like, oh, so what have you built this year, right? We have to renew the deal, but you haven't built anything, right? Show us something. And so it's important to be able to like balance all of these parts of what you need to be building.
Yeah, that's lovely. But maybe I think this leads to the core of the discussion here or the complexity of discussion, because you mentioned the customer lens, you mentioned the kind of strategic lens, but there is a balance component saying, hey, we want to expand this or kind of perfect this new product, but also need to work on innovation or product finding product market for the other one.
Yeah.
How do you actually put this into the priorities?
Yeah, so it's a trial and error, I'd say, way of doing things. So we have tried multiple things. I'll try to cover a couple of them. So I remember once we tried to do like bucket allocation in a way. So we are like, okay, so 50% of time we are going to work on strategic features and then 20% of time on customer satisfaction features. And, you know, we try to bucket them into little groups, which was a good idea in the beginning. But then to be honest, it's very difficult to track how much time do we really spend on in each bucket. And then if it spills over that bucket, right, what do you do then? Do you stop working on that feature if you haven't finished it on time? Or do you say no to the rest of it and then you keep doing that? So it was challenging for us to keep track of it. I know it works for some people, but for us, it just didn't. So we, didn't pursue that idea the following year. What we are trying to do now is just being very clear with the strategy. So, for example, if we are prioritizing this product this year, that means that, okay, we will allocate some time to work on the other product, but our focus is, you know, to keep our market leadership position with this product. So this is what we have to be doing this year. And that makes trade-offs a little bit easier to make, I'd say, because you know that this is where you should be focusing. In the next year, for example.
Okay. Then if we go back to the, let's say, the selection that we were doing about the strategic pillars, then we're saying if we were focused on this product, probably it's more about, for example, in this case, the app market strategy than the expanding into Australia strategy.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, okay, exactly. And I think that works really well for us because we have a single team, right? We are not splitting into two different teams for two different products. So for us, that's the trade-off we have to be making. If this was a different setup, right? If we had two separate teams, then that would work differently. And exactly. Teams would have their own strategies at that point.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you feel that by having these two focuses in one team, I'll say distracting is not the right word, but what I'm trying to ask is about the cost of the context switch that the team might have from kind of changing from kind of one topic that may be completely unrelated to the next one. So how are you handling that? I think it's more tactical than strategic, but maybe that's a relevant question.
Yeah. It's also a tactical question. And also what's important to understand that most of our engineers are full stack engineers. So we want them to be able to work on any part of the product versus whether it's the first product or the second one, and then also be able to do both front and back end for it. That's our strategy now. I think if we grow larger, we might revisit it in the future. But with the current team size, I think that's the optimal way of doing things. Just because, you know, if you have a small number of team members and somebody goes on holiday, and then you can't deliver the front side of things, it's not particularly great. And it's not going to help you move faster. I feel like it really depends on the size of the team and the goals for the year.
That makes sense. I will assume that also that decision has a cost in terms of, say, I've got training all engineers to be able to do both things.
Onboarding takes longer than, exactly. Okay. And also context switching is an interesting question as well, because we tend to have a couple of people working on the feature at a time, but sometimes if we want to be working on a couple of things at the same time, it has to be like a single person, right? And because they are a full stack professional, they would be able to deliver the whole thing. But the question is how long it's going to take them. And then also, depending on the seniority, there should be someone else who would be doing all of the code reviews and, you know, making sure that everything is on track. And for that person, the context switching is a huge issue, just because during the day, they have to be thinking about so many things at the same time. It's also something that we experiment with all the time as well, and just seeing what works best at this point of time.
And actually I didn't think about this topic, but in the book Team Topologies, the authors talk about the I'm not sure what's the terminology they use, but it's basically the complexity of the understanding of the product the developer needs to have. And as you have more specialized teams, this complexity of the problem is reduced, so they can be more focused and more agile, but faster on the domain they are working. But as the domain is more complex, then it's more cognitive load. That's the term. The cognitive load for developers is higher, so then things start to kind of be either a bit slower or a bit more complex to solve.
Exactly. And I think that's why a lot of companies at some point, they try to create these product pods or, you know, smaller product teams as well, which makes sense as well.
Got it. Maybe going back to same on the team division topic, but going back to a bit more of a strategic question, how do you perceive the team, I would call it motivation, for lack of a better word, but, you know, for example, what I tend to assume, kind of putting into the table my own interest, is that teams working in a 10-year product may be less motivated than the ones working in a newer product that is trying to fight for product market fit or whatnot. Is this something that in your either your vision or your strategy plays a role?
I wouldn't say so. I know why you're saying that. I can understand why you would think so. But I think because we have a lot more customers using the first product, there are quite a lot of interesting things that we could be addressing there. So it's that we have the core, it's working, it's great. But then there are these like innovations that you can keep coming up with for the first product versus the second product, where there is a lot of core functionality that still needs to be addressed and built. So I wouldn't really say so. I think there are interesting challenges in both products. And we also tend to do quite a lot of integrations as well, just because at some point we realized that a lot of our customers use our product alongside a million of other digital products. And ideally, like a lot of people want to have one tool for everything, right? And we don't want to be that company, like a Swiss Army knife. So our strategy to address that is to be able to integrate with many applications that they are using. And so that's, you know, another side of us being able to be integrated into the ecosystem of other products our core customers are using.
Yeah, great. So Now I'm going back to the, so I went deep into the team topics. I will kind of go back to the strategy.
Sure. Yeah. Zoom in, zoom out. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe summarizing the storyline where we are at. So we started with the company vision, then we created product visions, then we selected the most important challenges, and that's through the diagnosis that you selected with some business cases to see what are the key focus areas. In this case, on the balance topic, you say, okay, we will focus on one product per time. This is a question now is, how often do you review that strategy to see if it's relevant to keep focusing on this product or versus switching to the other one or changing focus, essentially?
I think we tend to revisit it once per quarter, probably. That's mm-hmm. when we start working on the OKRs for the next quarter. And that's where we like fine-tune our strategy a little bit. And then we tend to review feedback from, you know, what we've been hearing from our customers this year and how do we think the market changed, right? With the whole ChatGPT madness at the beginning of this year, we had to rethink our strategy as well. And we did add an AI powered product as well, like everyone else did. So I'd say it depends. So usually it's one per quarter. And then if something big happens in the world, that's another like notch to revisit it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But maybe on that front, so we are at the midst of the strategy and the deployment of the strategy. You mentioned OKRs as a way to deploy it. Is there something in between? So we said that the strategy is some sort of way of summary of your big document or whatever you're trying to express. Is there a roadmap afterwards or you jumped from the strategy to the OKRs?
Good question. So after we've done these business cases, like I mentioned before, and then we prioritize the things that we want to be working on in the next year, we then try to work with the designers to create high-level wireframes for how approximately we are thinking of addressing this problem, if that makes sense. Just so we can then get it back to the development team and then check with them how feasible it is, they think, you know, what their strategy would be in order to address that and things like that. That just helps us sync a little bit better. And then for me, it's also important so that I can then plan it into the like high level roadmap as well throughout the year, just so I understand how much, you know, resource and time we have to address it. Having done these wireframes and having had estimates from the development team, again, it's not estimates, it's like a very high level estimates, right? Because it's not designed properly yet, but just a rough estimate as to how long it might take. We put it on a like a quarterly roadmap, and then based on that we then create OKRs, if that makes sense. So for example, if we have the roadmap for the year and then we know that Q1 we want to be working on this one, that means that our OKRs should be focused on that one.
What I tend to get from what you're saying is that your the problems that you are solving have certain degree of, I would call it certainty, because I mean, you in this B2B world, you have, as you said, customers are trying to solve a problem. So it's very clear that either they are not solving the problem or they need more, or how they solve the problem can be made easier. So that's the type of opportunity you're pursuing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. One of our value offering is saving time. So that's exactly what we are trying to help our customers with, making things more efficient, integration with other systems so that they don't have to, you know, double entry all of the information all the time and things like that.
Yeah, perfect. So then pushing a bit further on this implementation of the strategy, and I'm going back to the balance question. I will tend to imagine that in reality, this balance, I would say we will focus on this product, is easier to make the strategic decisions. But then when you are kind of playing the game during the year, you will receive a ton of customer feedback and sales requests or whatever, and it will get a bit messier. So how are you handling that a bit on the more tactical level again?
Yeah, good question. And I think it also depends. So the more upmarket you go, the more your customers are demanding from you, right? Because they expect you to be doing more for them specifically versus building the product, if that makes sense. So it's a fine balance, and it's a lot of balancing exercise. I think what works for us at the moment is we always leave some time in the sprint for ad hoc work. So tickets that come in can be nice to have, smaller size tickets, can be bugs, can be, you know, other things that we can't predict, and then we just leave some time in the sprint to be able to address them, and that's how we can put in a little bit of like non-strategic work in, and then keep the customer satisfied for when something is really not working for them and something is really annoying in a way.
Yeah, got it. So essentially, going back to the backend discussion, you're saying X percent of the time is for strategic work, and then the other X is for the, say, day-to-day? Or...
Yeah, but it's not fixed, right? It's We don't say it's going to be 15%, and if this feature, if this ticket is going to take, 17%, we're not going to do it this sprint. It's we try to be a bit more flexible because we understand that, people might need to have it addressed faster, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, what I'm still having in my head is the tension between, so let's say we have this time for the, let's call it again, the day-to-day work or the emergencies or however you want to call it.
Yeah.
But I assume there's a tension between the two products, right? Because you have product with more customers, so it may be a bit more relevant from a revenue perspective, so to speak, to address those issues. But then you have the other one who is fighting for survival, and if you don't assign some love to it, it will fail.
Yeah.
So is there? I mean, what I'm trying to say behind the same thing, I think, is there is no ROI calculation on these priorities. There needs to be something else, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think what we in our ROI calculations, we always try to. Put some more future context to it, if that makes sense. So, of course, that if I were to calculate ROI now, the numbers would be vastly different because, the revenue opportunity is a lot larger with the first product, of course. But then if we look at it from a strategic lens, then the second product has a lot more opportunity in the future, if that makes sense, because it's, for example, our product is a lot less legislature based versus the first product, and it can be expanded a lot easier to other geographies, and it can grow a lot faster. So yeah, having that that's where vision comes in handy, right? Because we know that okay, in 5 years we want to be there, and of course we are not there yet, but this product is easier to grow. That's our assumption, and that that means that our ROI calculations would be a lot different if we think about the future as well.
Got it. Okay. I assume it's complex, but the logic behind it makes sense. Maybe one question to add on top of the balance challenge. So you seem to have found a good solution for the two products dilemma in your strategy. What is the most challenging topic that you faced in the kind of last exercise of strategy you did?
So during this strategic prioritization, we also tried to organize a couple of meetings with customer success team, sales, marketing to get their perspectives as to what they think we should be doing to address their needs. For example, with marketing, they might want to have an integration with this new tool that they will be using in the next year for a customer success team. They are always on the forefront working with customers, and they hear a lot of their pains and they want us to address them, things like that. So I feel like this can be a little bit challenging when you have received perspectives of all of these teams, or for sales, it can be, what will help them close larger deals or sell faster or things like that, right? It's then trying to then get it all back on the table and then try to keep all of these perspectives in mind when making these strategic decisions, if that makes sense. So that might be a bit challenges. And then once you have done that decision, then you need to communicate back, right? Hey, we are not going to be able to help you integrate this tool next year, right? Because we have a different priority, and that can cause some tension as well, unfortunately. But it's life, and resources limited always.
I will enclose it between the topic of expectation management, because at the end of the day, you want to open the door for them to bring their ideas, but that creates an expectation that their ideas will be considered. And yes, exactly. They can be considered, but at the end of the day, we need to decide. So it's
expectation management is very important, I think, because you don't want to tell them, what do you want us to work on? We will do this, right? It's more like, can you give us an input as to what we would then be working with when prioritizing this in a way? I think it's a big part of PM's job to be managing everyone's expectations.
It's so hard to manage how people will interpret the door open for input, but I'm totally right. All right. This has been wonderful. We have gone through all the process. Maybe my typical final question is, what's an interesting learning about the strategy that you have over the years, not necessarily in this experience, that you think is important and we didn't cover with these questions?
I think for me, the main thing that I understood is that it's not set in stone, right? The way you've done it this year might be a lot different from the way you've done it last year. And that's why I think your podcast in particular is very interesting, because people can get a grasp of what other people are doing and understand how people approach it from very different perspectives, right? I feel like every episode is a different framework or a different kind of way of working on the strategy. And it's the beauty of it, right? Because you can experiment in a way. It's your experiment as a product manager. It's what you own. And it's really great to be able to try different things and then see what works and then fine tune it and then maybe change a little bit further down the road and then just keep improving it. Like building a product in a way, right? It's building your strategy as well. It's an iterative process and it's always very interesting. And I love doing it. So yeah.
Love it. I absolutely agree. And I think that's the beauty of collecting experiences from others that sometimes are hard to find another product leader and discuss strategy. So I think it's a good way to frame it. Exactly. All right. Irina, where can people find you or what they can do to help you and support your work?
Sure. So I'm mostly active on LinkedIn. So if you wanted to check out some things that I write about, that would be amazing. And also, yeah, if you're in London anytime soon, feel free to come and join one of our product tanks. We do them once a month. And yeah, we'll be happy to have you either as a participant or maybe as a speaker one day. So yeah, feel free to reach out as well.
Awesome. Thank you. It has been really wonderful. And thanks for all the insights you shared.
Thank you. You too. Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of 100 Product Strategies, the podcast by Product Direction. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram to get access to free weekly content that helps product people upgrade their skills and become more successful. You can access more material, promotional trainings, and be notified of every episode of the show with Product Direction's weekly newsletter. Join thousands of product leaders by registering in productdirection.co.